Mr. Weldon.
Good morning, Your Honors. I come before you this morning on behalf of Mr. Bobby Johnson, Jr. The facts of this case are very, very simple, and since they're so simple, I'll go ahead and recite them. Mr. Johnson was a tow truck driver for Hicks Record Service, located in Indianapolis, Indiana, and he worked for Hicks Record Service for approximately 4.5 months. And during that period of time, he worked 12-hour shifts on behalf of the employer, and he was often working over, around 60 hours or more a week in this capacity. And during that entire time frame, Mr. Johnson was not paid any overtime premiums for the hours that he worked over 40 hours a week. And so I come before you this morning with a matter of first impression for this circuit, and that is whether or not this circuit is going to follow a regulation issued by the Department of Transportation on July 23rd of 1981.
Well, we're obviously going to follow the regulation. It hasn't been challenged. The question is, deals with the evidence. Now, we've got this one affidavit in the record saying that something happened routinely. Interstate dispatches happened routinely. I mean, my particular question I have for you is whether you followed up by, say, attempting to take the deposition of the affiant to ask her what she meant by the word routinely.
No, Your Honor, I didn't.
Did you serve an interrogatory to ask for records saying, give us your records of all the interstate dispatches within the last 4 months or something like that?
Your Honor, I can honestly say that I did not ask for a specific request for reduction along those lines. However, I did ask for all the general requests for reductions along those lines, as in, please issue any documents that you have that with regard to an affirmative defense. But as the record shows in this case, Your Honor,
doesn't get to the level of specificity. My final question is, did you file a Rule 56F affidavit in the district court?
My client filed an affidavit with the district court, Your Honor.
Rule 56F. That's the provision saying, please don't grant summary judgment. I need to take discovery relevant to one or more of the issues underlying the pending motion.
Your Honor, we had a great deal of difficulty getting any kind of written discovery from the defendant.
My question has a simple answer. It's either yes or no.
No, I did not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I did not, Your Honor. Your Honor, it's our position that the word routinely does not give a date of proof from which the district court could determine what four-month period, if any, the employer had anybody, any one of their drivers, perform an interstate run on behalf of the employer. Routinely could mean once a year. Over the 30-year period that the employer had been in business, it could mean every 5 years.
I agree.
And you realize, of course, if you had done the follow-up discovery, we probably wouldn't even be here. I mean, you got a general response in the affidavit to your general request.
Your Honor, yes, that's probably true, but you have to understand, we could not get discovery from the defendant. I mean, sanctions were entered, and that's part of the record, $4,500 plus in sanctions, I'm approximating that, and sanctions were entered because we could not get discovery in this case.
Right, and there's no question, the word routinely is imprecise. You're right. It could mean a number of different things, consistent with liability or inconsistent with liability. I can also see from a look at the record that getting material from the defendant was like pulling teeth. But it really does seem to me that without some evidence that routine means something other than what the defendant believes it means, the district court had no reason not to grant summary judgment. The 56F process really would have enabled you to say, I need to get the travel logs for this company for the last year or the last 4 years or whatever it might have been.
Well, Your Honor, and granted, with the benefit of 20/20 hindsight, I'm not going to disagree with anything that you've said. But at the time, I get an affidavit which says nothing. It just says routine, which means nothing. I don't know if that means once a year.
It means something. Your problem is, and the district court's problem is, that the word is not quantity, right? It's a qualitative rather than a quantitative description. So we need, you may think, that you needed to pin down the quantitative view as well as the qualitative view. But that's the source of the questions from the bench. It doesn't appear that you either served the discovery request that would pin it down or told the district judge under Rule 56F that it had not been possible to do that.
Your Honor, it's my understanding that the employer has the burden of proof with regard to proving an exemption, and that burden of proof is a heightened standard. It has to be, and I'll just plainly and unmistakably proven.
Heightened standards here. This is civil litigation. Everybody's going on a preponderance of the evidence. This heightened standard business is expressly rejected in Yee against Sterling Collision. Okay. Let's just go with the law of the circuit.
Sure, Your Honor. But plainly and unmistakably proven that the exception applies.
Not plainly and unmistakably. It has to be established by a preponderance of the evidence, the simple, straightforward civil standard.
Okay. Your Honor, there is no data proof. We have no date to work from in order to establish in a four-month period here. We have no dates to work from whatsoever. We have no idea if there were any interstate commerce being performed by the defendant anywhere in February or March of 2006, which then would have been within 4 months of my employee starting his job in June of 2006. We have no idea if there were any interstate travel in the months thereafter in order for it to apply. Without actual proof as to when interstate runs actually occurred, we have no idea whether or not this exemption was being applied properly to my client. If, for example, the last interstate run the defendant had occurred in December of 2005, then there would be no question that my client would be entitled to overtime premiums because there would be no proof that they had done any interstate commerce within the four-month window. This four-month window makes a great deal of sense to me because without it, you could simply have people not obtaining their overtime premiums when an employer is simply not engaged in interstate commerce, and the notion that they would be engaged in it is remote. I think 4 months is pretty lenient for employers to have to show that they actually engaged in interstate commerce. And since we have no dates whatsoever, I don't believe that we can have a date of proof, which is what is referenced in the regulation. A date of proof signifies an actual date that one can hang their hat on, and that simply does not exist in this case. I don't believe that a date can be the word routinely.
A classic mixed metaphor. I don't know how one could hang a hat on a date.
I try, Your Honor.
Fall down.
I try, Your Honor. Your Honor, unless there's any other questions, I'll wait for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Welby. And Mr. Poole, you get the reverse of all of these questions. Mr. Poole, why are we here? Mm-hmm. It's so easy for the secretary of the corporation to file an affidavit saying we had X number of interstate trips over Y period, rather than some useless language like routinely, which means different things to different people.
Very simply, Your Honor, it was a rush to get some documents together.
All right, you rush to get a document together, then you follow up the rush with data. Right, this is a total waste of time for four judges, two lawyers, and goodness only knows how many other people. The two lawyers, of course, have their meters running. We don't have our meters running, but there are other things to do than fill in the gaps of a careless record keeper who doesn't supply readily available data.
Some of the records were actually destroyed. For instance, the actual tickets that are written by the drivers, many of those were unavailable because the basement storage area flooded out. Mm-hmm. And it was only sometime after we had filed this summary judgment motion that the secretary said, why don't we just look at the IFTA reports, the fuel tax reports that actually have itemized all of the out-of-state trips on them for fuel tax purposes. As it turns out, they were in interstate commerce every single month that Mr. Johnson worked there.
You say that. Is that supported by the record?
No, it's not.
Yeah, not be making any representations that are not in the record.
And then I assume drivers who were still working for the for Hicks that had done these interstate trips, if you couldn't find these documents, they were destroyed, whatever, they could have testified. I mean, the thing is, if we find her affidavit is enough for Hicks to meet the burden to defeat the regulations requirement that the carrier provide concrete evidence, I mean, that's problematic. Because the regulation calls for concrete evidence so employers don't get out of paying overtime when people are traveling in interstate commerce.
Well,
and all she did was basically track the language and kick it back.
Your Honor, the regulation to which we're referring is actually something that was assembled by someone at DOT as a guideline. If you actually read the language contained in that regulation, it says explicitly that satisfactory evidence would be statements from drivers and carriers and any employment agreements. Well, we have a statement from a carrier.
Well, but not from the drivers who were presumably were still available, as Judge Williams pointed out. I'm curious about your comment about the rush to get the documents together, because my sense, and this is just based upon the judge's granting of sanctions, was that, in fact, there wasn't a big rush. There was a long delay in getting documents, and that was the reason that the magistrate judge was involved and that ultimately sanctions were awarded, because it did take so long to get these basic documents from the defendant.
The period of time that I had to assemble the summary judgment motion and collect what documentation I had in my possession at the time was the rush. My apologies for misunderstanding. But as far as the actual requirement for proof, I actually don't read any date of proof requirement necessarily. What we have here is an uncontroverted statement, an affidavit from the secretary stating that they are routinely, they have been and continue to be routinely in interstate commerce.
But the problem is, does the secretary view routinely as every year? Right? Every Thanksgiving Day we ship some turkeys or pick up a wreck in the wrong state? Does this person mean every day? The problem is that routinely means different things to different people. That's why you need to reveal what the meaning of this word is by putting something concrete in.
Your Honor, as far as the regulation is concerned, it clearly, and I think the case law substantiates this, is not required to show that Mr. Johnson ever actually traveled in commerce, whether as a driver or as a helper.
It's just the route.
As within employees' brief, it asserts that.
I'll tell you that this court routinely reverses decisions in which district judges granted summary judgment without an adequate evidentiary record. How often do you think that would be? Once a week? Once every 6 months? Once a year?
I'm fairly certain it's more than once a year. And if it were more than three times in a year, that would take someone probably within the 4-month window that's being asserted here.
Well, how many drivers? Is that in the record, how many drivers were employed at Hicks?
It is not in the record.
How much are we talking about in terms of dollars here?
Well, that sort of depends on who
record?
You're speaking with as well.
I'm sorry?
Employees' initial claim on this and the state wage claims that were part of the original case, the first demand was for $26,000. It really hasn't gone down since then. I would argue that if overtime were not an issue, then $500 on a state claim.
So, to be honest
with you, I frankly don't know.
So it's $25,500 for overtime pay. Is that right?
I, Mr. Weldy would be the one to ask about that.
I just wanted to, why this is such a huge problem and this couldn't be resolved. I was just trying to get a handle on it. Is it because you have 1,000 truckers and, you know, you think you anticipate that there are going to be all these overtime demands or, you know, just trying to get a handle on what the dollars are and what?
At the risk of asserting a fact, my clients, they're not concerned about the money so much as they're concerned about someone has accused them of wrongdoing and improperly withholding pay that they were owed. And Hicks Wrecker Service does not appreciate an accusation like that and is not terribly interested in settling on that matter just for economic sake. Otherwise, none of this would be here. And as far as employees' interest in this court granting him summary judgment on both overtime liability and the individual persons listed here as employers, even if this were to be an issue with your honors, frankly, there's not enough evidence in the record to support either one of those. The finding of overtime liability as a matter of law could not be supported in the other direction based on what's in the record any more than employee asserts that this one was supported. The second issue is...
But then we come down to the issue of burden of proof, correct? If the evidence is inadequate to establish anybody's claim, don't we look at who's got the burden of proof? I know it's counsel's plaintiff's position that it's the defendant that bears the burden of proof on this issue about travel and interstate commerce and the exemption from Fair Labor Standards Act.
I suppose I don't really understand the question in the sense that if no one can establish a preponderance, a burden-shifting routine would not...
No, this is not burden-shifting, right? You're asserting an affirmative defense under the Act. Mm-hmm. Right, rather than an element of the claim on which plaintiff bears the burden. It's pretty common that when the defendant needs to show an affirmative defense, the defendant bears the burdens of production and persuasion. Right, so if the evidence doesn't support a decision by a preponderance, back we go. Right? That's just straightforward. It's not a question of burden shifting.
Okay, then... I'm afraid I still don't understand the question about
the burden. You have a big problem because you're the one that's asserted the defense, and you don't have concrete evidence to support it. That's the bottom line. And so if we don't find there's concrete evidence to support it, it goes back to the district court.
I believe we do have concrete evidence. We have an affirmative statement from the secretary, and it has not been controverted in any way, shape, or form, in spite of the fact that
you're just not getting it.
Yeah, and this routinely, you have no problem with this word routinely. You don't see at all what our questions were getting at.
Right. It's not a question of
it can't be defined.
I absolutely agree that it is far less definite than it should be.
It's not a question of controverting it. Mm-hmm. The problem is the word means different things to different people. And we need to know, therefore, what it meant to the affiant. And, unfortunately, we don't. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Poole.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Weldy?
Your Honor, just to let you know, we're asking that if this court were to reverse the decision of the district court with regard to the application of the exemption, that this court also reverse the implicit denials of plaintiff's cross motions for summary judgment, which is obviously if the exemption doesn't apply, then there is liability as to Hicks Wrecker Service for the FLSA. And then, of course, we're going to need to have a damage trial to determine the amount of that liability, and also liability as to the three individual defendants for whom we placed sought summary judgment, put on evidence, in which the defendants did not actually supply any contradictory evidence in the court below. I just wanted to clarify that because I think that's what was coming out a little bit during the appellee's discussion. Your Honors, this is not a perfect case. I did not do a perfect job in this case, regardless of how long it took. The discovery issues that I might have had, I'm not going to sit here and say that I disagree with the assessment of this court with the benefit of 20/20 hindsight. But I do believe that for the purposes of a circuit court decision stating what the standard of proof needs to be on such an important exemption, that this court has really no choice but to reject routinely as the type of concrete evidence contemplated by the regulation and necessary in order to prove the exemption. Unless there's any further questions, that will be all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.